ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। अथ ईशाचिहि चहि त्रैस्तम् ग्रसन्थं भुवनत्रयम् ग्रस्थानि येन न कृष्णा तेजस्यस्त्रायधानि च अथो ईशा चहि त्रैस्त्रम् ग्रसन्थं भुवनास्त्रयम् ग्रस्थानि येन न कृष्णा तेजस्यास्त्रायधानि च अथो therefore ईशा ओ सुप्रीम कंट्रोलर जाहि किल त्वास्त्रम् द डीमन वृत्रासुर Son of Tvastha, Grasantam, who is devouring, Bhuvanatrayam, the three worlds, Grasthani, devoured, Yena, by whom, Na, our. Krishna, O Lord Krishna, Tejamsi, all strength and prowess, Astra, arrows, Ayudhani, and other weapons, Cha, also. Therefore, O Lord, O Supreme Controller, O Lord Krishna, please annihilate this dangerous demon, Vritrasura, Tvastha's son, who has already swallowed all our weapons, our paraphernalia for fighting, and our strength and influence. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Namam duskritanor mudha prapadyante naradhama mayaya pahrita jnana asuram bhavamashrutaha chatur vita bhajante mam jana sukritanor juna आरतो जिज्ञासुरार्थार्थी ज्ञानी चा बरतार शभा। Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me, O best of the Bharatas, Arjuna. Four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me. the distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the Absolute. The four classes of neophyte devotees who approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to offer devotional service because of material motives are not pure devotees. But the advantage for such materialistic devotees is that they sometimes give up their material desires and become pure. When the demigods are utterly helpless, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead in grief and with tears in their eyes, praying to the Lord, and thus they become almost pure devotees, free from material desires. Admitting that they have forgotten pure devotional service because of extensive material opportunities, they fully surrender to the Lord, leaving to his consideration whether to maintain them or annihilate them. Such surrender is necessary. Bhaktivinod Thakur sings, Maro birakobi yo icha tohara. O Lord, I fully surrender unto your lotus feet. Now as you desire, you may protect me or annihilate me. You have the full right to do either. Om Gyantimidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Bilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Yudhapadakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahakana Raghunathanvitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bhandu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Therefore, O Lord, O Supreme Controller, O Lord Krishna, please annihilate this dangerous demon, Vritrasura, Twasta's son, who has already swallowed all our weapons, our paraphernalia for fighting, and our strength and influence. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, entitled The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura, Text 44. Herein, the demigods are continuing their appeal for shelter of the Supreme Lord. Srila Prabhupada writes here, when the demigods are utterly helpless, they approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead in grief, and with tears in their eyes, praying to the Lord, and thus they become almost pure devotees. These beautiful stories reveal to us so clearly the nature of the world that we live in. Padam padam yadvipadam natesham. That there is danger at every step for everyone. It's just the nature of material existence. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Because everything's temporary. Krishna tells us in Gita, Abrahma bhuvanar loka punar avatanojama mamupetya tukonteya punar janmanavidyate. From the highest planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patalaloka, essentially, there will be suffering. Because everything will perish. And things just can go in so many different ways. There's a beautiful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam where Lord Brahma, after waking up from being asleep, he has to recreate everything again. And he's lamenting. Now what a selfless task to create something where people have to suffer. But then he realizes that the purpose of creation is enlightenment, self-realization. If things were so good, we would forever be satisfied with very limited, temporary pleasures, which have nothing to do really with the eternal soul. Thus, the eternal soul is Satchit Ananda. It is seeking unlimited pleasure. It is seeking unlimited love to receive, to give. And that only comes on the spiritual platform. And that spiritual platform is within all of us. It is all of us. So whatever may come in this material world, the happiness, the distress, the honor, the dishonor, the pleasure, the pain, the success, the failure, victory, defeat, health, disease, birth, death, all these dualities, their essential purpose is to signal to us who we really are. And the Lord helps us to make that decision. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Comes again and again and again into this world throughout the ages in different places. Either the Lord incarnates personally or through expansions or through dear devotees, saintly people. Just to remind us where real happiness is. And it is interesting in various spiritual histories how so many saintly people go through so many difficult situations just to teach us how to go through those difficult situations. Srila Prabhupada writes, there's a saying in Bengal that the mother teaches the daughter-in-law by instructing the daughter. The idea is when the daughter-in-law comes to a strange house, there's a certain amount of apprehension. So the mother doesn't want to disturb the daughter-in-law by saying, you're doing this wrong, you're doing this wrong. So she just tells the daughter, who doesn't mind at all because she's used to the house. And the daughter-in-law sees and learns by that way. So similarly, the Lord teaches the world through great souls how to live in happiness, how to live in distress. Our tendency is when there's happiness, we start thinking that I'm so wonderful, and everyone is so wonderful, and everything is so wonderful. And we get so caught up in that wonderfulness that we forget what the purpose of life is. Or when there's distress, when there's great opposition, we get so caught up in asking questions like, why is this happening to me? This shouldn't happen to me. I'm so nice. I'm so good. And how am I going to deal with this situation? We get totally caught up in the material condition. So either of the dualities can trap us in different forms of illusion. Queen Kunti, she prayed, Vipadashanduta Shashvat Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru. She prayed, when calamities come, there's no one but you, my Lord. So let them come. But for most people, when calamities come, we become totally obsessed in just trying to somehow or other get out of it. So therefore, we understand through the lives of great personalities, through the essential teachings, which is telling us how material nature works and why it works this way, what our real purpose is, what the opportunity is. To remember Krishna, to remember God with love, that's the only satisfaction of the soul, and it's actually the only real solution to anything. The problems in this world are not economic. They're not ecological. The real problem in this world is we're so attached to the temporary things of the world, we get caught up in all this stuff. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva lokamaheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatvamam shantimrichchati. That one can attain peace when one simply accepts that the Supreme Lord is the proprietor of everything. Everything is ultimately meant to be utilized in harmony with the will of the Lord, for the pleasure of the Lord. And that the Lord actually is our most intimate, loving friend always, in all circumstances. So the difference between a transcendentalist and a ordinary entangled person is not the physical things around them of what happens. It's simply how they respond. And here it describes there are different levels of devotees. Now, there are demigods who are paramahamsa, great devotees. But there are others who are devotees, but they're very much attached to material results while they're serving the Lord. And they're very attached to enjoying those results. In such situations, even they, with all their power, with all their knowledge, from time to time, they are put in situations where they are helpless. They become oftentimes prisoners of the success, the prosperity of their good karma. Because the more you have, the more you have to work to maintain what you have. The more fame you have, the more you have to fight against people who are trying to drag you down. And you're trying to somehow or other keep that. And nothing's stagnant in this world. If you're not somehow struggling for more, what you have is going to be taken away. That holds true with our health also. You don't just get healthy and then leave it at that. Yes, you have to exercise regularly. You have to eat regularly. You have to always be struggling against disease, struggling against complacency. To be healthy, you have to keep working on it. To be wealthy, you have to keep working on it. Whatever it is, material world is it's like a downstream. The stream of the river of material existence is always going down. And if we want to stay, we can't just stay where we are. We have to struggle to go up. Otherwise, we naturally go down in every situation. In due course of time. So demigods are such a good example because they are hundreds and thousands, if not millions of times more powerful than any of us. And yet they struggle with the same things that we do, but on a much higher and broader dimension. So it's not that these things change by any material or spiritual endeavor. But what does change through our spiritual endeavor is our consciousness. Just like when Lord Chaitanya was doing kirtan at the house of Srivas, the very, very materialistic people, they would condemn the devotees. What is all this chanting and dancing and all this puja and all of your devotion? What is it doing for you? A saintly person dies and a materialistic person dies. What is the difference? It's interesting because in all great spiritual traditions, very holy days are the disappearance days of saints, great self-realized souls. Isn't that interesting? If they're eternal, everyone's afraid of death, and transcendentalists, their purpose is to transcend death
But every transcendentalist were celebrating the day they died.
Is that a contradiction? Medieval. They shouldn't have disappearance days. They should live forever. The problems in this world, Krishna says, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam, are birth, old age, disease, and death. And the purpose of yoga, the purpose of religion, the purpose of transcendentalism is to transcend birth, old age, disease, and death. And God teaches the world through those who love Him. And practically every person who loves Him, we celebrate their disappearance day. That means they died. But there's a complete difference between how they die and how others die. Because they really don't die. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a story of Madhavendra Puri. He was very old, and his body was very worn out by living in this world for a long time. And he was bedridden, so much bedridden that his disciple, Ishvara Puri, would personally clean his body, bathe his body, pick him up, do everything for him. But Ishvara Puri understand that his guru, he's a totally liberated soul. Because he had realized he's not this body. His body was purely transcendental, not because it wasn't growing old. It was purely transcendental because this temporary body was fully engaged in the Lord's service. Bhakti is to transform material energy into spiritual energy through the purpose in which we use things. Om Purnamada Purnamidam. Krishna tells, and Ishopanishad tells, that everything is perfectly and complete because everything is emanating from the Absolute Truth, who is perfect and complete. Everything within this material nature is spiritual to the extent we understand its connection to Krishna. So yes, everything is temporary. There may be tsunamis, there may be earthquakes, and even if there's not, we're going to grow old. And eventually the body dies. I saw a statistic that in the future coming, it's predicted that 1 out of 3 men and women are going to get cancer in their life. Now, whether you live through it temporarily or not, to cure it is extremely painful in most cases, and sometimes it cannot be cured. So this is a medical statistic. If we look around in the room today, we count the people, how many people are likely to get cancer? It's a difficult world. So how do we see this as spiritual? Whatever may happen in this world, it is our duty to keep our bodies and keep the environment and keep everything as pure and as wholesome as possible because it's God's property. If we understand that the air belongs to God, the land belongs to God, the rivers and the oceans belong to God, then how could we possibly be careless and pollute them?
environmentalism, from a spiritual perspective, is simply an expression. It's just the natural expression of love for God and respect for all living beings who are living within this environment. No matter how clean things are, it's not that we're going to live forever. But we honor and respect God's property. And we see it as spiritual. Somebody is seeing the sun in one way and another person is seeing it another way. But the truth is, the sun is Surya Narayan. The Supreme Lord, through the sun, is giving light and life to the entire universe. In the Gayatri Mantra, we honor and meditate on Narayan or Krishna within the sun. Because although the sun is material, in one sense, it's spiritual in a deeper sense. Because through the sun, Krishna is giving life to everyone, giving light to anything. Nothing could exist within material existence without the sun. It's the source of rain, it's the source of light, it's the source of heat. So we are 100% 24 hours a day depending on the sun. Yes? And yet how many times during the day when we're out in the sun do we think of that? Do we show any gratitude to the sun? We put on sunglasses because we think the sun is a disturbance to us. We put suntan lotion on because we think the sun is a disturbance to us. So nothing against suntan lotion or sunglasses, but whether we use it or not, we should honor that. You know, I may not be qualified to be able to deal with the sun's incredible prowess, but it's sustaining me. It's giving me life, and it's giving everyone life. Our sisters and brothers and mothers and fathers and children, everybody finished without the sun. The power of the sun is incredible. It's the source of all energy. We cook, we heat ourselves with wood. And what is wood? The fire within wood is because of the sun, the energy of the sun being absorbed in that wood. And when you light it, you could just bring out that energy. When that wood goes into the ground, you know, through millions of years, it becomes coal. It's just seasoned wood underground. And that coal hasn't seen a ray of sunlight in thousands of years. But yet the sun is so within it, the energy of the sun. You light it and it makes fire. And then when coal, after a long, long time, it becomes oil. That's way down sometimes. What is it? Just the energy of the sun. So powerful. So really what the Gayatri Mantra is teaches us how to be grateful. How to be grateful for the grace of God in such an obvious place as the sun. Because most people, they go through their entire life and never even recognize God's grace coming in the form of the sun. And Surya Narayan means the Lord is actually within the sun, giving us life, giving us light, giving us everything materially. But in material creation, even the sun goes out. Just like the avatars of the Lord come and they go from our vision.
But the grace of the Lord is eternal. The presence of the Lord is eternal. And the presence of the soul as our essential true being is eternal. So to see that reality is transcendental vision. And that transcendental vision is beyond birth and beyond death. Asam sijinani yatha vihaya. The Bhagavad Gita explains death is a change of clothes for the eternal soul. Now, just because we have to change our clothes, it doesn't mean we don't take care of our clothes. In spiritual life, you're supposed to wear clean clothes.
Yes.
It's sattva guna. It's not that we neglect, just because I'm not my clothes, I neglect it. Or just because I'm not the automobile that I drive in, that I don't put gasoline in it, I don't put oil in it, I don't take care of it because it's not me. If we understand the spiritual purpose that the automobile is being used for, we'll take care of it better than people who are just attached to their automobiles. So similarly, these bodies, we take care of them because they have such a sacred divine purpose. But we understand that they may get diseased no matter how good we take care. And eventually they are going to get old and they're going to die. Yes? Madhavendra Puri, when he was on his deathbed, he was crying out in separation from Krishna in the ecstasy of love. Oh Lord of Mathura, you have left me. He was in the mood of Radharani when Krishna went to Mathura away from Vrindavan. How am I going to survive without you? What am I going to do? That was his mood. It was love and separation. And Ishwara Puri and the great devotees, they understood his total absorption in the ecstasy of love for Krishna. They honored him and worshipped him and tried to serve him in so many ways by singing the glories of Krishna constantly to him. And Ramchandra Puri, he heard his guru calling out like this, and he said, why are you so morose? You're supposed to be a transcendentalist. You're not supposed to be morose. If you don't see Krishna, then meditate on Brahman. He couldn't understand. He was seeing his guru from a totally materialistic perspective. And because of that, Ramchandra Puri, because of that offense to his guru, for the rest of his life, his inclination was simply to find faults with others, whoever they were. He was even finding faults with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was so humble, he didn't argue with him. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord. He was living in Puri, and devotees would invite him for prasad. It was their ultimate happiness in life to serve the Lord prasad. And he would just reciprocate with their love by taking their prasad. And Ramchandra Puri would come and see this, and he would harshly criticize Lord Chaitanya. Publicly, that what kind of sannyasi? He eats too much. He eats such nice foods and he eats too much. And he was like that with every devotee. There's a story where he invited one devotee, I believe it was Jagat Ananda Pandit, please come to my house for prasad. And he gave him prasad. And then The devotee said, "That's enough." He said, "No, no, please take more." He said, "No, no, that's enough. Just a little more for me. Please take a little more." "No, no, I've had enough. Take more, please." "Okay, I'll take more." And he'd take more. And he'd finish it. Ramchandrapur, he was like, "Please, a little more." "No, no, no, that's enough. Tora, tora. Puran, puran. No more, no more. A little more, please, please." "Okay, I'll take more." Then Ramchandra would start screaming at him. "Just see, you are just like Lord Chaitanya. All of you devotees, you eat too much. Abominable, disgusting, horrible." And he'd spread around how they're just, the devotees are just attached to their senses, eating too much. That was his enjoyment. That was actually how he found pleasure in finding faults with others. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, "The only reason that someone looks for faults in others is because they are honeycombed with so many faults themselves. The world is a mirror of our own consciousness. If we have good qualities, we'll see good qualities. If we have faults, we'll see faults." Now, sometimes great souls will tell us our faults, but they're not criticizing us. They're not making propaganda against us. They're just trying to help us to overcome those faults. They're pain to see our faults. Like a doctor, a compassionate doctor, is pain to see your disease. So this is your disease and this is how you can treat it. That's productive. That's constructive. But without that spirit to simply find faults with others, like Ramchandrapuri, it means there's something really... If we have that propensity, an intelligent person will think, there's something wrong with me, and I have to rectify that. That common saying, when you put your finger towards somebody, there's three pointing toward you. But some people just look at that one finger and think everything is about you. Shishupal, he could only see faults in Krishna. There were no faults in Krishna. But because Shishupal had so many faults, he would see them in Krishna, and he would see them in everyone. So Ramchandrapuri would be, he'd come into Lord Chaitanya's room and start chastising him for eating too much. And Lord Chaitanya didn't argue. He told all the devotees, "I'm eating too much." Ramchandrapuri said, "I'm eating too much. So from now on, I'll only take one third the portion, and I'll just eat some boiled rice and some boiled vegetables." And the devotee said, "No, no, we want to give you malpuras, and we want to give you so many nice rices and nice sabjis and everything and sweets and cakes from Jagannath. This is Jagannath Prasad, and we'll make it for you." And Lord, "No, no, we'll just have some boiled rice and a little boiled vegetable, and just this much." And the devotees were in great pain. Lord Chaitanya said, "Ramchandrapuri is my friend. He's helping me. He's helping me to become detached." So this is the difference. What a difference. One is finding fault in somebody that has no fault. And the other is finding good in someone that has nothing but faults. So the question is, are we going to follow Ramchandrapuri or are we going to follow Lord Chaitanya? And the devotees, they wouldn't say anything against Ramchandrapuri either because Lord Chaitanya was so respectful to him. But they were praying from their heart of hearts secretly that he would leave. So that Lord Chaitanya could eat nice prasad and they could feed him nice prasad and they wouldn't have to always be hearing all this stuff. And eventually he left, and everyone was very happy. But it was a beautiful lesson. And, you know, this propensity to find faults in others is a result of offenses that we do. And the more we do it, the more we become habituated to it. The difference between material life and spiritual life is what we become habituated to. Yes, if you smoke cigarettes, the more you smoke, the more you become habituated to it. You can't be free of the habit by just smoking more and more and more. The addiction increases with every puff you take. And we're thinking it's giving us pleasure. Srila Prabhupada saw that billboard on the highway with a beautiful man and a beautiful woman under a waterfall smoking cigarettes. And it said, be cool and refreshingly cool, smoke cool. I don't know if they still have cools, but that was the name of the cigarette. And Prabhupada looked up at it, he says, they're smoking fire and telling you it's cool. And everyone believes them. So how we sell things, it's all psychology and psychiatry of advertising is quite advanced, actually. If only we could use that to liberate people rather than bind people. So here at New Dwarka, devotees, they rise early, they dance and sing Mangal Arati, they come for classes, they chant. These are habits that liberate our souls. And if we don't substitute our bad habits with good habits, then the bad habits just bring us down more and more and more. And this tendency to find faults is a bad habit. And the human mind will subdue the intelligence so that the intelligence goes to work to totally justify everything. Yes? That this is the most saintly thing I can do. But everything is so simply revealed. So Madhavendra Puri, let us go back to Ramchandra Puri, his disciple. Because he was just seeing the physical dying of his guru as something mundane, like anything else or anyone else, and instead of appreciating it, he started criticizing. His propensity was just to find faults with everyone and everything. And Ishvara Puri, he was just the opposite. He was seeing the love of his guru for Krishna as he was going through this final journey of death, physically. And the disciple of Ishvara Puri was Lord Chaitanya. And when Lord Chaitanya was in Shantipur, he saw Advaitacharya arranging for the disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri. And what an incredible celebration. Advaitacharya was not a rich man, he was a Brahmin. But everything he had, he invested in this ceremony. There were rooms full of sabjis. There were rooms full of grains. There were rooms full of flowers. There were rooms full of ghee and milk products from
you know, nice protected cows. There were roomful of coconuts and banana leaves. Lord Chaitanya couldn't believe what he was saying. And Sachimata, the Lord's mother, came, and she said, I'll take charge of the whole cooking. And others were taking charge of garland making, and others were ornaments, and Lord Nityananda was taking charge of greeting all the guests and washing their feet and making them happy, and everybody was taking responsibilities. And for days and days, everyone was working together for this festival. And it was blissful. Because to the degree our service is without selfish desires for the pleasure of God and for the pleasure of others, brings satisfaction to the heart. It's wonderful. And Lord Chaitanya said, anyone who celebrates this disappearance day of Madhavendra Puri in this spirit will definitely get love for Krishna. So we're celebrating the day somebody dies. Why is that? Because the disappearance of a particular person is, Prabhupada gives the example of that prophet that came to a town and he was giving blessings. He said to the brahmachari, better you die. And he said to the prince, better you live. And he said to a butcher, better you neither live or die. And he said to a great saint, he said, better you either live or die. And somebody asked, what does all that mean? He said, the brahmachari, so many austerities, so many troubles he's taking for, you know, his spiritual advancement. But when he dies, he's going to go back to the spiritual world, so better he dies. And the prince is enjoying like anything, but is engaging in so many selfish karmic activities. He's going to have to pay the consequences for all of them. Better he lives. And a butcher, all the violence to these innocent animals, he's going to have to pay the consequences in next life. And he's surrounded by the screaming and the death of innocent creatures in this life. Better neither live or die. And for a pure soul, serving Krishna now, and according to the eternal nature of the soul, and when it dies, just carries on serving Krishna wherever Krishna wants him. Narayana para sarve nakutashtana bibhyate swarga pavarga narakeshu apitulyata darshanam. Lord Shiva said this about Chitraketu. He said, this is the quality of those who are devotees of Narayan. Whether they're in heaven, whether they're in hell, or anywhere else, it really doesn't make any difference to them. Because in whatever situation, they're going to serve the Lord with love. They're going to chant the Lord's glories and names with love. They're transcendental to birth and to death. For a great soul, death is simply the doors to the eternal abode of the Lord opening wide. So yes, we celebrate their appearance, and even more so, we celebrate their disappearance. So being a transcendentalist doesn't mean there's no death. What we call death in this world is simply a change, a transcendental promotion. And is this just based on faith? Some people, they try to analyze things psychologically, that because death is for everyone, and nobody wants to die, because it's the end of our existence to people who have materialistic conceptions. It's the end of our identity. Therefore, throughout the ages, we create all these different things to give us hope that there's an afterlife, that there's a heaven, that there's a Vaikuntha, just so that we could be happier in life without having to worry about death so much. Yes. But factually, the most enlightened, compassionate, loving, self-controlled people with the highest character throughout the ages, universally, have taught us about the eternal nature of the soul, have told us about the eternal abode of the Lord, of that liberated state beyond the confines of this temporary body. Are they all cheating us? Are they all lying? The Lord reveals it. All the great souls reveal it. And just logically, Krishna says the embodied soul is passing through so many different incarnations in this very life. Conception, that little atma goes through the semen of a man and enters into the ovum of a woman. And when you were in that state, you were very unrecognizable to what you are now. Yes, if somebody just took a photograph of you at that state, when you're just, you're just a little, your body was very, it's like a messy little thing. Can't even see it. And then you grow. Eyes and ears and heart and lungs and hands and feet. And now you can speak, you could see, you could hear, you could do so much. You could save the world, destroy the world. You could do so many things. From childhood to youth, to old age, the same witness, the same soul, the real you, is experiencing life. Materially, everything's always changing, but the soul is the witness. And in the same way we're changing, the soul is the witness, the constant witness through all the changes of this life, when this body is no longer fit, then the soul moves on. According to the choices we make and the consciousness we develop in this life. And that's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. So whoever we are, there's going to be beautiful things and there's going to be ugly things. There's going to be justices and injustices. There's going to be pleasures and pains. It's the nature of this existence. And the purpose of this existence is to realize who we really are and help to make the environment around us as conducive as possible, as pleasing as possible, so that other people could also make that, so that everyone else could also come to that realization. When we see the sun, we offer our pranams to God who's giving us light and life in the sun with gratitude. When the rain comes, instead of just running under an umbrella, we may have to run under an umbrella, that's all right, but while we're running under the umbrella, this rain is saving us. Without this rain, there would be no water, there would be no food, there would be no life. Yes. And when disasters come, because disasters just happen in this world,
whatever our explanation may be, we may talk about how it's collective karma, we may talk about what it's just natural conditions of this world. But if we remember God in a disaster, we become liberated. And if we try to help people who have suffered from disaster, we become liberated. In Bombay, we have a hospital, and we deal with earthquakes, because they happen in India. Two of them were devastating that our devotees went to try to help. One was in Latur, Maharashtra. I believe 12,000 people died. It's just a couple hundred kilometers from our ashram in Bombay. I've told the story. It's quite amazing. I just sleep on a straw mat on the floor. And one morning at 4 o'clock, I was just getting up, and the whole floor started trembling. Really violently trembling. And you get kind of eerie and nauseous because it's like disorienting. And then the whole building started trembling. And books on the bookshelf started flying off. Windows were breaking. The door shutters were going. And our little children downstairs, we have an orphanage, they were all screaming out Krishna's names really loud. It lasted about 30 seconds. And just a couple hundred kilometers, just 150 miles, whatever it may be, from our temple, 12,000 people died in that 30 seconds. And hundreds and thousands lost relatives, lost all their property. Then a few years later, we didn't feel it so much, but in Gujarat, a place called Bhuj, about 15,000 people. And our devotees go there with ambulances and with vans and with trucks and try to help everybody. But interestingly, we have a spiritual care. Orthopedic people come and heal, put casts on their broken arms and broken necks and broken legs and try to give, medical help. But we also give spiritual help. Because people in that type of desperation, they're really, really, really seriously suffering. It's not that they just have a broken leg. It's that they have a broken life. Their mother and father are dead. Their sisters and brothers are dead. They have no property. They're orphans. Their broken arm is the least of their problems. Wives are widows. Men, everything they've worked for in their life is finished. They're penniless. They have no house. They have nothing. There's no insurance. Very difficult. But our devotees were giving classes on the eternal nature of the soul. And how in every situation we can do seva, we can serve. We could be connected with God. And we could do kirtan to access the blessings of God. And in our kirtan, we can pray for the departed souls of all these people who have died and give them God's blessings too. And we can actually do, and people were really chanting in these kirtans. And they were really attentive in the lectures. And almost everyone was saying that this was the most unique and helpful and therapeutic thing, was the spiritual care. Because things do happen in this world. And rather than just uselessly blaming God, why did you create things like this? You could do a better job. That's one way of looking at it. But the reality is, this is the way it is created.
And, you know, God's not going to listen to our complaints because people have been complaining since forever. But learning to love God in all these different temporary circumstances. Learning to love God when there's the temporary pleasures and the temporary wonderful, wonderful environment. And learning to love God when it's different, when things are troubled. But the real happiness is in loving God. Yoga, connecting. Connecting to our essence, connecting to Krishna. And that situation is there for all, everyone. In life and in death, whatever time we have, we can use it to learn to love God and be an instrument of that love in everything we do and everything we say. And then life is absolutely beautiful. Sometimes things will be beautiful. There'll be wonderful celebrations and festivals where devotees are dancing and singing and smiling all over the place. And other times we go to help people in disasters. But our service is the same. To be instruments of compassion and love. And to really care to bring people into that state of happiness, which is transcendental. So celebrating disappearance days is very important because it's very revealing. And in this particular verse, death personified is standing before the demigods in the form of Vritrasura. He's just the person you don't want to meet. He's gigantic and he's eating everything around. Yes? And the demigods had their best weapons and are throwing it against Vritrasura, and Vritrasura is just eating them all. Now that's really an insult. Yes? When your weapons, which are supposed to be so dangerous and so life-threatening, he's just... That's really an insult. It's demoralizing. It's one thing if you fight against them and you're showing that they have some power and some prowess, you're fighting against them, and even if you lose, you know, at least, you know, there was some potency of what you've done. But Vritrasura, he just, with all the weapons, he just opened his mouth and and the demigods are thinking, what are we going to do about him? It's totally helpless. And he was stepping on them like little ants. Now, the demigods, they're multi-billionaires with really strong, healthy bodies that last a long time. And they have tremendous amount of control over others. But yet, they're in a situation where they're helpless. And in that total helplessness, they realize there's nothing we can do to solve this problem. And they helplessly, with tears in their eyes, turn to God. And in turning to God, they actually understand and realize the real wealth they have. That devotion that is within, that we become so distracted that we forget about. So in the good times, we try to remember by singing and dancing and enjoying Krishna's prasad and Krishna's association with devotees and beautiful festivals and just doing wonderful things. And when difficulties come, we do the same thing. We turn to God. And this is what it means to be transcendental. Whatever may be, we know where our shelter is. We know where our happiness is. And Krishna is so kind. In every situation, we could chant his names. And Krishna is there to completely reveal, restore, and reciprocate our love. Lord Chaitanya said there's no hard and fast rules. When we see a beautiful sunrise on a perfect nice day on Santa Monica Beach, we say, Hare Krishna. And when there's a massive hurricane coming, we say, Hare Krishna. And we're happy. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.